Good morning, everybody. So my name is Yoann Wauthier, and I work in Symantec's localization department in Dublin. And I oversee the evaluation deployment of language and translation technologies. So my talk this morning is going to be slightly different from what we've heard so far this morning, right? It's not going to be so much about integrating machine translation within translation or localization workflows, but rather it's going to focus on the steps that are required in the authoring step to make sure that source content is controlled when using machine translation. And for those of you who probably still wonder what type of machine translation system we use, well, the fact that we're using control language means that we're using a rules-based machine translation system, which is SysTran. So just to give you an overview of what this talk is going to be about, very briefly, I'm going to make sure that we have clear definitions on control language, right? Because there can be some confusion around the use of this particular term. I will then talk about the deployment of control language within Symantec as a company, reflect on some of the challenges that we experience when deploying, and try to draw a list of lessons learned. Then give you some information about the actual impact of controlling source content when using a machine translation system, especially a rules-based MT. And I will use two slightly different use cases. So using machine translation with a view to publishing documentation, and using machine translation for gisting purposes, because I think these are the two uses that we've mentioned so far in the last 2 days. And finally, I would like to take a bit of time to talk about the future direction, so what I see in terms of research that's required with regard to source control. Okay, so very briefly, definition of control language. So the very strict use of control language is something that's going to create a subset of a natural language that uses a restricted grammar and a restricted vocabulary. And there's been a lot of implementations of such control languages in the past, mostly in technical domains. And the main objectives behind the implementations of such control languages was to make sure that source content was clear and less ambiguous. And additional benefits also included improved comprehensibility and improved machine translatability. So we've got an example here of such a control language, so in the very strict sense of the term. So when we started researching control language at Symantec, that was 4 years ago, we decided that it's not the framework that we wanted to use, and there were a few reasons for that. And the main reason is that Symantec is a company that works through acquisitions, right? So let's say every 6 months we would acquire a new company. And developing a control language based on a given documentation set is something that would have been very difficult to update on a gradual basis. So rather, we wanted to have a loose approach to control language, make sure that source content would be structured and would be compliant with regard to key areas. And these areas being spelling, grammar, style, and terminology. So here I've got a bit of detail on our setup of control language and its use in conjunction with a rules-based machine translation system. So we use an environment connected with a content management system, which is Versant. So we have structured authoring already. And when we decided to add a control language, we decided to have a plugin within XMetal, which is our XML editor. And I will talk a little more about the control language checker that we use to enforce compliance for the four areas that I mentioned. And the main reason as to why we decided to go with this level of source control is that we had been using internally machine translation system in a variety of languages. So I've got the list of languages here, so French, German, Italian, Brazilian, Spanish, simplified Chinese, and Japanese. And we wanted to use this machine translation system for large translation projects. So I'm not talking about the traditional products that you are probably familiar with when you hear semantic. So for example, the Norton products, because those Norton products are quite small and extremely repetitive in nature. So from one version to the next, there's probably 70% of leverage coming from translation memories. And this is not where the real savings are in terms of machine translation deployment. I'm talking about larger documentation sets, so in the range of hundreds of thousands of words, so large enterprise products. And we wanted to really demonstrate cost savings deploying MT on these projects. And we decided to implement specific control language rules in order to minimize the hit that we would get in authoring productivity, right? So we didn't want to impair authors with a huge set of control language rules. Rather, we wanted to really focus on those rules that would help our machine translation best. So we had XML editor, we had the content management system, and we wanted a control language checker. And we reviewed a few, and we decided to use the solution developed by Acrolinx. So at the time it was called AcroCheck, and it's now it's been rebranded as Acrolinx IQ. Right? So that particular control language checker was customized to deal with semantic content. So for example, the part of speech tagger tokenizer were customized on semantic data. For those of you who are not familiar with this product, it's based on pattern matching. So it is a reactive approach, right? So we need to know what we want to find in the content if we want to flag it. It's not going to find things by itself. And we have context-sensitive rules. So I said that we were using XML to author our source documentation, and we've got rules that deal specifically with certain elements in the XML content. And we have suggestions for specific rules that are coming up so that end users can use these suggestions, or for more complex rules, we've got help files. So Acrolinx IQ is not only used to make sure that content is compliant in the four areas that I mentioned, so grammar rules, terminology, rules based on existing corporate guidelines and MT-specific rules, but it's also used to harvest, store, and access source terminology. And I think this is something that's extremely important, right? So control language is not just about the rules, but it's also making sure that source terminology is defined when we're working with source content. And for those of you who will remember Daniel's presentation of the ideal world, I think this is what we're trying to achieve, to try and define source terminology before a project starts, or at least before it arrives in localization. So just a few words on lessons learned during this control language deployment. So we went for a strict implementation, so making sure that source documents were compliant with rules, terminology, and so on, when there was actually new content, right? So we didn't want to apply the rules on content that was already in our translation memories. And I think this is something that's extremely important, right? So you don't want to affect your translation memory leverage by changing the source text. So it's a very useful when there is a little leverage and when you have a bit of time in order to make sure that the source text complies with all of these rules. Something that's worth keeping in mind as well is that the resources that are going to be used by the control language checker have to be maintained over time, right? So, and this is something that we knew from the start. We didn't expect the magic solution that once deployed would never have to be updated. As soon as we have new documentation sets, we have to make sure that the resources are updated. So as I mentioned before, for example, the tokenizer, the tagger or some of the rules. Another important point as well is that we try to implement rules that were quite generic, right? So rules that would have an impact in several target languages. We didn't want to implement rules that would have language-specific effects, right? This is something that is going to be best addressed by other strategies, for example, pre-processing or machine translation normalization, and I will come back to these strategies towards the end of my presentation. And the final point here is that even though you have control language and machine translation is not always going to be sufficient, right? You still need to do some work to make sure that terminology is present in your machine translation dictionaries. And that's something, again, that we knew from the start, right? It's not the magic button where you can just press the empty button and then send the content for post-editing. The terminology work had to be done in-house in Semantic, and I've indicated here the size of our machine translation dictionaries. So around 15,000 translation entries per language pair. And we still need to go through post-editing because we have publishing requirements, right? So it's not just for gisting, but we want to make sure that the content that we publish in the end is of good quality. So I've talked a bit about the various pieces of the workflow, and I just wanted here to show you an example of a simplified workflow. So at the very start, you've got control source authoring that includes terminology harvesting and validation, right? So this is something that we do for every new project. And then we've got empty tuning. So what I mean by empty tuning here is really doing the terminology work to make sure that our Sistran engine is actually optimized in terms of terminology specific items. And then we use this customized system to pre-translate source content, so using a combination of translation memory and machine translation. And once this is done, we can send the translation memory for post-editing, and this is something that we outsource. Right? So we are empty users, but we are empty users in a pre-translation context. Okay? We are not dealing specifically with the empty output. And I think it's very important to make this distinction. We are empty users, but the users of the final empty output will have different requirements than the ones that we have in terms of extensibility of the empty system, in terms of customization, and so on. And when we get back the content from post-editing, we do evaluation. And this is a key thing to make sure that the empty system is going to improve over time, right? It's not, again, the magic button pushing it and it's going to be fine for the next 5 years, right? We have to make sure that the system keeps showing signs of improvement, even if these signs are limited, because we use a third-party empty system, right? So we cannot change the internal rules of the system. But we have to show post-editors that we are taking their feedback into consideration, and this is very important. And I'm going to give you a little more detail on evaluation. Before I do so, just a few words on why it's so important to control source content, because we could say, well, you know, the empty system is going to deal with it anyway, especially if it's structured. Just an example here of a sentence that could appear in technical documentation and that was found in a technical note. Okay, so very long sentence, complex. Problematic punctuation. So if we try to send this directly to the empty system, we're going to have some problems. But I will come back to that later. So we are controlling source content at the segment level, right? So we try to reduce complexity and ambiguity in order to reduce post-editing effort. So that's done at the segment level. And at the sub-segment level, on the terminology front, we do control by making sure that we harvest new terms and that we define translations for those terms before the start of the translation project, right? So in the past, we used to rely on translators to actually create translations during the actual translation step. So this is no longer the case. We have in-house linguists for these language pairs that define terminology translations before the start of the actual post-editing step. And this is really going to reduce communication between post-editors and reviewers later on in the process. Okay, so I talked about the impact of control language on empty quality. And here I just wanted to give you some concrete numbers about the impact of control language. Okay, so left-hand side, we've got number of words that were used as sample sets were evaluated. Then we have the type of evaluation that we conducted. So when we do our evaluation of empty output, we use human metrics and automated metrics. Human metrics come in four categories. So those segments that are excellent, good, medium, or poor. Okay. And in terms of automated metrics, we used GTM, okay, General Text Matcher, which is a type of automated metric. And we consider an empty segment to be of good quality when the GTM score is above 0.6, right? Okay, so it's not the same as a Bloor score, but it's something that can be used as a reference if you've never heard of GTM before. And we have the type of evaluation, and then on the right-hand side, we've got the AccuCheck project score, right? So taking those segments that fall in these categories, we have the AccuCheck project score. And the AccuCheck project score will indicate the level of compliance of source text with regard to the resources that we have. So grammar, spelling, terminology, and rules. And the lower the score, the better. Okay? And we can see that we've got a nice correlation between the level of compliance in the source text with human evaluation and with automated metrics. Okay, so this really demonstrates that for an application where empty is going to be used in conjunction with post-editing, controlling the source is crucial. Okay, so very briefly, I would like to say a few words about a different type of empty application. Right, so it's not about post-editing anymore. It's about publishing empty output for gisting purposes. And when we try to use the same approach of controlling source content, we obtain results that are slightly counterintuitive, right? So here we conducted an experiment whereby we had a piece of source content that was uncontrolled and its corresponding version that was controlled. And then we machine translated those two versions into French and German and asked users a few questions, including this one, which was, did the quality of the translation hamper your comprehension, right? And users were randomly presented with one of the two versions of the document. So for French, no impact of control language, right? And this is probably due to the fact that that document was used for gisting purposes, so it doesn't matter if it's grammatically incorrect. We knew that there were problems in the empty output, but users, at least French users, didn't seem to mind that much. But for German, we obtained very different results, right? We had a majority of German users complaining about the quality of the empty output that corresponded to the uncontrolled version. Okay, so two very different uses of CL and MT. CL and MT for post-editing and CL and MT for gisting purposes. I know that I'm running out of time, but I just would like to put this final slide with regard to the future directions that we foresee in terms of source control, things that we would like to explore a little more. We know that we cannot control everything because we've got this loose approach to control language, so we would like to do a little more before sending source content to machine translation, right? So we would like maybe use pre-processing, and that's something that came up yesterday. I think it's Philip who mentioned reordering, right? So similar approach, try to maybe add some words in the source content, remove some words, flip words around to make sure that the empty system performs better with certain structures. Or maybe add some tags, right? So for example, for those ambiguous terms, add some metadata there so that the empty system can use that metadata and produce a translation that's going to be refined. And that can be done using SysTrans technology, which is based on XSL, right? Next thing that we would like to do next is combine a pure CL approach with a reuse approach, especially when it comes to two sentences that have the same meaning, right? So we already have a lot of segments in our translation memories, and we know that sometimes new source sentences are exactly identical in terms of meaning with those sentences, and we would like to have them presented to authors. So it's really CL by example rather than CL by rules. Also try to use our experience in controlling source to control target segments, right? So we know that we've got problems in the empty output, so maybe we could use some rules there to fix a few things automatically. And finally, I would like to leave you with this point here, which is, I think, extremely important, is that, yes, there is a cost involved with deploying control language in an organization, but the effort that's made in controlling source content, especially in identifying term variants and so on, can be leveraged in other parts, right? So more and more we see that we have translation requests for user-generated content, whether it's forum posts or chat, and we know for sure that this type of content will never be controlled. But we can use all the information that we acquired during the deployment of control language to prepare and optimize the machine translation resources that we use. And this is really what I wanted to say today. And sorry for taking too long.